Ready over there? And welcome to the San Luis Coastal Unified School District regular board meeting for August 16th, 2011. The board met in closed session, and we met with our agency-designated representatives. We discussed negotiating with our California School Employees Association and San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. The board did not take any action on closed session items. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, seeing that, let's move on then to approval of minutes. We have several sets of minutes, beginning with a revision of the May 10th, 2011 meeting. And Kim, do we need to, and so we need to take action on this? So we need to rescind the previous action and approve the revised minutes. Is that what
it
says?
That's correct.
Does the person that made the motion on the previous minutes need to make that motion to rescind it, or are we good otherwise?
Wow.
It's a clerical error, so
okay.
We're not revisiting
so we
the
should
motion.
Be good
we're just
on. Okay.
making a correction, so anyone can do so.
So should we do it as separate motions?
Yeah.
One to rescind and then one to approve?
I think we should. Why don't we do that as separate motions?
Okay, I'll move rescind and approval of the previous approval of the minutes of May 10th, 2011.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
So it's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carries 4-0. Now, with meeting of June 21st, can I have a motion on that one?
I'll move to approve.
Been moved by Mr. Buckman. Any second? Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. Meeting of June 30th.
I'll move approval of the minutes of the meeting of June 30th, 2011.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Millar. Second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 4-0. Moving on to the meeting of July 12th.
Move approval.
Move motion by Mrs. Roger. Can we see a second here?
Go.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Millar. Any discussion on this one? Seeing none, bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0.
I'm exhausted. Can you take a break?
We can take a break for public comment right now. We actually have three requests to speak, but I believe actually two of them are on item number two, and would you folks who are speaking on item number two like to wait until that item, or would you like to speak now?
I think it would be better if we spoke at the time of the item.
Okay, so we'll wait on item number two. Okay, great.
Mr. President, should we reconsider our order of business in order to accommodate the public members who wish to speak on this item?
Or? If that's the feeling of the board, we can certainly do that. I would do it after public comment because we do have one request to speak at public comment.
Mr. President, I just wanted to clarify something on the June 12th minutes.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. July 12th.
Yes.
Wasn't the board retreat July 18th? Monday, July 18th.
Yes, and I did not give you a correction, but I did correct that in our minutes. But let's make that public
okay.
correction.
So I don't know what that requires, but
do we need to do anything, Mrs. Holmes? To
no, I'll just do that magically.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. So let it be noted that that was actually for the meeting of July 18th, yes. 2011. So let's go to public comment, and then is the board in favor of moving item number two up to another point here? That work for everybody? Mark? Okay. So we'll do that. We'll do our public comment, and then we'll go to item number two, and then we'll go back to superintendent's updates. We have one request to speak. Mr. Angel.
Good evening. Phil Angel, San Luis Obispo. As you know, I was previously a member of this board, and one of my last acts as a member of the board was to attend Operation School Bell, where students in need are given clothes at the old Pacheco, clothes and school supplies, clothing and school supplies. And I wanted to thank the district for all their efforts, especially Mr. Guy, Mr. Manderscheid, and Mr. Miller, who were instrumental in really setting up the old Pacheco building. And then, as you know, I left my position to pursue career interests, and so I want to say it's been great working with you guys. I feel the district is headed in a great direction. I'm excited to see the initiatives. I'm excited for the schools my daughters, second grade and third grade, will be attending in the future. So thank you, guys.
Bye, Phil.
Bye, guys.
And thank you, Phil. And I know several of us, before you walk out, I know several of us also attended the Operation School Bell, and we too would like to extend our thanks, as Phil mentioned, to Mr. Guy and Mr. Manderscheid for the help that they did. And on behalf of the board, Phil, we thank you for your service, and we wish you well.
President Ottinger, could I speak on behalf of our Board of Trustees? We would like to, our district will donate a book to the Pacheco Library on behalf of former trustee Phil Angel. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board? Come on up.
Thank you. My name is Jim Nett. I'm proud to be a teacher of San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and I'm looking forward to...
As we're precluded from doing so under the Brown Act, because whatever the public comment may be, it was not agendized so that other interested parties could be here. But I do want to make one clarification, if I may, to the statement that Mr. Nett just made, and that would be that we are... moving forward with the board's initiatives and not Dr. Prater's initiatives.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close public comment, and then we'll move on to item number two, public request to reconsider preschool transition kindergarten building at the new Pacheco School. And the item will be presented by the citizens residing on Farini Street near Pacheco School. Who's going to be your spokesman? And could you step up to the microphone, sir, and identify yourself, and you may begin.
Thank you.
Now, what I'll do is you'll go ahead and present the information that you need to present. The board may or may not choose to ask you questions. After all of your presentation and after folks have spoken to this item, I'm going to close the discussion to the public, and then I'll bring it back to the board for any discussion they may wish to have. Okay? So please state your name and go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is Gary Dwyer, and I'm a resident of the neighborhood adjacent to Pacheco School. In addition to that, prior to being appointed a professor of architecture at Cal Poly School of Architecture and Environmental Design, I had a professional design practice that was involved in projects that ranged from the master plan for the Telluride ski area, a college in New Hampshire, a marina and hotel complex for Sardinia in Italy. I'm an expert at site planning. This is what I do. I want to tell you this not because I'm bragging, but because I want you to understand that I know this subject really well. So you've been provided with some kind of follow-up data in terms of photographs and a couple of pages of documentation. And I want to show you some imagery and some understanding, hopefully, that will assist in the communication of what we are trying to understand, and also trying to provide appropriate, viable solutions to this problem, which is, at the moment, difficult, and if it proceeds as it is expected to proceed, it will become exacerbated and profoundly worse. So we're looking for solutions. We're here with some positive ideas. So going through a couple of things briefly, the existing situation is shown here. Unfortunately, you can't see the red curb because of the projector doesn't show it that well. But the current circumstance in terms of the drop-off area at Pacheco is a disaster. Now, I understand that this kind of thing happens at a lot of schools. Pretty common. But this happened because the portables were installed. Before that, Pacheco didn't have this traffic problem. And it was done in a way such that all of the mitigation requirements were not fulfilled. There's evidence of that. But what I want to show you is a couple of these images that address the complexity of this situation, because there's parking on the side of the street where it's supposed to be permitted by permit only, and the parents are anxious. They're trying to get their kids to school. So they park anywhere they want to. They don't read the signs. They park all over the place. And they will park in the drop-off zone. They will double park in the drop-off zone, and then the street's completely blocked, and people are put at risk. So if we move to see this at a kind of a bigger scale, we say, look, we've got a problem that's existing. And that problem is that the real concern here is safety. This little kid is running through the rain behind a car that's not parked, that's in the red zone, and somebody's going to get hurt or somebody's going to get killed. Now, that's the existing circumstance. So what does this mean in terms of what's proposed? If we look at the proposed at the site, just to get you oriented here a bit, where all of those applications are down at the bottom is Cerro Romaldo Street, Farini's to the right, and all of the, excuse me here for a second, all of the existing portables are up here. Now, we want is on Farini Street if they're going to use this location. That's the only spot. Anybody who thinks otherwise is completely misinformed about how we behave in relationship to streets and vehicles. So this drop-off is already completely clobbered up, and now there's going to be 100 more vehicle trips per day. Now you say, okay, well, they're going to be staggered because it's preschool kids. That's true, but it still overloads the street past its existing street loading capacity according to city regulations. Now, we've been told continually in the past that the reason this was to be located here is because, the utility stubouts from the previous locations were installed in a very close-by fashion. Well, okay, that's true. Now, when we look at what that's about, we see that the electricity comes out very directly from the existing library building. That's a pretty simple thing. It's about 40, 50 feet away from where the building is proposed. So, okay, that's great. Now, if we look at the other utilities, which, by the way, we were told by the facilities staff here that it wasn't worth looking at these drawings because this was already a done deal. Fortunately, the Office of the State Architect in Sacramento was a lot more forthcoming with the plans, and that's where we got these. So now if we look at the various utilities and their locations, we find out they're in the middle of the site, and the proposed structure is over here. So it's still 40 or 50 feet away from the utilities. Okay. Now, if we look at alternatives, that are trying to address the traffic problem, trying to address the safety problem, because this one doesn't. We're going to find that there are other options that are very viable. Sorry, going the wrong way here. Okay, so if we look at some other possibilities, we can see that if the same configuration were placed on Cerro Romaldo, that the parking that the preschooler parents would have is adjacent to Cerro Romaldo, and they would walk in, or they would even use the existing road that goes into the school and perhaps circulate on through to the parking lot. Now, we've been told that this other site, the one that's over on Farini, is the item, the only discussable item, because of its location to the utilities. Well, I submit to you that the utilities are in this street, and it's no bigger distance to this utilities in the street than it is from over here. And there's a chance that it's not going to cost even as much money, because I would bet that there's utilities running in this road. There's certainly data coming off of this building. The only lines that are coming off of the library are electrical and sewer and water. It doesn't have anything to do with data. So if we're talking about the logic of trying to solve this problem, we're talking about using the existing configuration that's already been drawn up, the idea of the preschool goes forward, and it resolves some of the traffic problem. And I said some because the existing situation is still going to go on. Okay, so that's one idea. There's another possibility, and it has to do with the fact that in an attempt to get away from Farini, if that existing plan were simply flopped 180 degrees so that the portables were located closer to the library and closer to the play area, there would be a tendency for parents to use the existing breaks in the fence cut across the lawn or to walk around the other way, at least after they took the trouble to find a place to park, because there is no parking on Farini. So they're going to have to park someplace anyway. So the idea is greatest good, greatest number, longest time. You put the facility where the people can get to it with the greatest amount of safety. So what we're asking you to do today is to reject the existing proposed location and to direct your staff to explore and use one of these other two locations, because they will help ameliorate a problem that's only going to get worse if the proposed location. There aren't costs involved with running each school, and there's, by the way, going to be different costs involved with installing each one of these preschools. We need to have the curb painted red on the drop-off side of Farini so that people don't park there at all. Horizontal sight distances are a critical issue when you're driving a car and you're distracted and you've got a little kid with you. It's a very, very, very important thing. I have copies of these items to pass out to the board, and I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you have.
I have a couple.
Mr. Millar, you had some questions?
Yeah, have the SLO PD taken enforcement action on these parking infractions that occur in front of the school?
That's a wonderful question, because I was just talking to the parking people today, the parking enforcement people, because we're forced to buy permits for this zone. And I told them I would be glad to pay five times the cost of the permit every year if there were any enforcement. I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen somebody get a ticket. I've called the police and they say, well, we can't be out there every day. You know, gosh, we only have certain staff. So parking enforcement's not going to deal with it. The cops aren't going to deal with it. It's turns into a situation where if any of the neighbors go out there and confront somebody who's doing this problem, then they turn into the bad guy. And then it gets really difficult. So we've tried. We've talked to the police. We've talked to parking enforcement. It hasn't done any good at all.
And then the other question I have is, if the entire curb on the Farini side of the drop-off zone is painted, does that mean there is no public parking on Farini unless you have a permit?
No, not at all. The place we're talking about is from this point in the drop-off zone down to here. That's okay. It. There's parking on that side of the street all the way otherwise.
And then, absent the enforcement, what is painting that curb red going to do?
Well, people have a tendency to pay attention to that more than this little tiny regulatory sign. I mean, I've actually pointed the sign out to people, and they say, gee, I never saw that before.
So is it currently a white zone?
Yes. It's got about 10 feet on the south end that's painted red, and probably 15 or 20 on the north end. It's only a matter of about, I don't know, 30 or 40, maybe 3 or 4 spaces, parking spaces.
Okay. I'd complain to the chief of police, too.
It might be on the list.
Any other questions, Mr. Miller? Any other questions from other board members? Sir, one question for you. When did you move into your house on Farini Street?
My house on Farini Street was built in 1941.
Okay, and when did you move there?
My wife and I have been there since 1975.
Great, thank you. Okay, now, do you have any other comments? Because otherwise I'll go to the public, and I know we have quite a few people who'd like to speak to this item.
If there's no further questions, thank you for your time.
Great, thank you very much. Okay, Mark. And each person will call your name, and if you then, when you come up to the microphone, if you'd state your name, and we'll give you 3 minutes per person speaking. So, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Thank you. We have Nancy Bigley, if I say that correctly, followed by Carolyn Smith.
Excuse me, I'm nervous speaking in front of this group here. My name is Nancy Bigley. I live on Farini. I've been there for 10 years, and it is College Central, so we have quite a few cars in that area. As it is. So my reason for appearing is my concern for the potential traffic congestion due to lack of or severely limited space for parking. As we're all aware, preschool-aged children are not considered independent and therefore must be escorted to and from the classroom.
Apologize for that. We need to record the meeting.
While I was employed at San Luis Obispo High School for 15 years, I had the opportunity to observe the Tiny Tiger Preschool on campus and the traffic involved with the arrival and departure of the children. There was a window of drop-off time, about 30 minutes, and then pickup usually took about 20 minutes. The preschool had high school students, which are the teachers, approach the cars as they pulled into the circle drive with clipboard in hand. They went to the parents for signature. They would then escort each child to the schoolyard and classroom. There were generally anywhere from 2 to 9 cars in the lineup at any time. This same procedure was used for pickup of the children at the end of the session. This practice alleviated the need for all drivers to park and walk into the facility. I would like to encourage all of you, especially at school time, and there's cars parked on both sides of the road, so it becomes very narrow. I encourage you to consider making the preschool entrance closer to the parking area on Cuesta Drive or Cerro Romualdo. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Carolyn Smith. I'm a member of Residents for Quality Neighborhoods here in San Luis. I'm on the board. But I'm talking to you tonight with the voice of Odile Erol. She could not come here tonight. She's a resident of Farini, has been there for many years. So I'm just going to read her statement that she's asked me to read for her. As homeowners and residents of Farini Road near the Pacheco drop-off, we request that the preschool be located where the ground has already been prepared for an extra portable by the library. When Mr. Guy made his presentation during a school board meeting, he mentioned several possible occasions but did not mention this particular one. It is all the more disconcerting that this location has long been prepared for an extra portable, is flat, and is even framed. This should have been shared with the trustees and with the public. Costs were the main reason given by Mr. Miller and Mr. Guy for rejecting the other locations we had proposed earlier because they were too far from the utility hookup. The location by the library is the closest of all because this space was created for a future portable. Mr. Guy said parents would park in the school parking lot located on the other side of the school. It's unrealistic to expect this to happen because they would have to cross the entire campus with young children in tow. Nobody does this now, so why would they do it with preschoolers? Furthermore, it would place an unreasonable burden upon parents and encourage them to park illegally. If the preschool is located on Farini, parents will most likely seek to park on Farini, especially since the preschool entry door is located by the drop-off. We wish to remind you that preschoolers cannot be dropped off. They have to be taken to their classrooms. The drop-off is a loading zone. It is not a parking lot. It has no parking signs posted in several places, as well as along the curb. The school side of Farini is occupied by the Pacheco staff and Cal Poly students, and the home side of Farini is a permit district. On any given day, there is no legal parking left on Farini during school hours. The school district has been warned numerous times that placing the preschool on a street with very limited legal parking, high car speed, high volume of traffic, no crosswalks, and a huge amount of chaos could lead to serious accidents. But as of now, the district has failed to address this important issue. Moving the preschool further to the center would improve safety in a way that is affordable to the school district and would significantly lower the district's liability. This location by the library would ease the most obvious problems imposed upon parents, preschoolers, and neighbors alike, and would require only goodwill from the school district. In turn, it would create goodwill from the neighbors and improve the relationship of the school with the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Next up would be Anna Barbarossa, followed by Victor Barbarossa.
That's Barbosa. My name is, Anna Barbosa, and we own the property at 234 Farini Road in San Luis Obispo since 1973. And it seems like deja vu all over again. When the multipurpose room was going to be built, it had been, they were planning on doing it on the corner of Cerro Maldo and Farini Road, and after many, many meetings together with the school board, the neighbors, and in discussions, and some not too happy, and some. But the point is that eventually we came to some kind of an agreement, and as I'm sure all of you agree, the building was placed in a much better location, which was not as intrusive. It didn't block views. It didn't create more problems on the corner, drop off children, and the parking was put behind it. Every morning to get out of the parking or the driveway, it is so dangerous because there's a lot of people that walk their children to school. There are cars parked, and they park on the permit area. They also park very close to the driveways. So when you try to back up, you can't see if there are cars coming or not. You try to back up, and there's a car so close behind you, you have to maneuver and do not only the three-pointer, but the four, maybe five-pointers to try and get out of the driveway without hitting a vehicle or hitting someone behind you. I think the issue here is Farini Road has been greatly impacted over the course of the years. And when we purchased it, never in our wildest imagination did we ever think that it would get to this point, because Farini Road was closed to Highland. Soon after that, it was open to Highland, and the nightmare began, and it still continues. My concern is this.
Victor Barbosa.
Good evening. Victor Barbosa. And we also, well, we own the house at 234 Farini Road, and since 1973. And just like the previous speakers, I'm concerned about the safety. My daughter lives there now, and she's got two children, and cars speed right through there. And there's no crosswalks, by the way. And I don't know if it's something that the school should have because of the safety issues. And they also, they should have a stop sign on Cerro Romaldo and Farini Road. And because the traffic comes out really fast, and they go up really fast, especially now that the Cal Poly students are coming back. I mean, it's a nightmare. When I mentioned about the problem about safety, it was mentioned that we were trying to share the problem with Cerro Romaldo residents, and they don't have the problem that we have, and you guys don't have the problem either. We do. A lot of times when things are built, people are concerned about animals, little creatures, you know, environment stuff, but never about children and humans. So it's about time that the school board cares about humans and their safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barbosa.
I'm going to not get this right. Gaijing Gu. Thank you, sir.
So my name is Kaixin Gu. So I live across from Pacheco, also on Frini. We do love the school, and I have kids. I mean, I have a daughter. She's going to be fourth grade. As you know, all the previous speakers are well, and I totally support what they, you know, say. It's, you know, if at a preschool that close to Frini, it's just going to make the things much worse. And I experience those kind of, you know, problem every day, and I have to walk across my daughter's, you know, to school, and because, you know, I mean, we're still close, so we always walk. Maybe I should go early, you know, like 10-20 minutes, but we always go at the time when everybody's come to the school because we are living so close. So I always walk across, and I try not to use my car. For quite a few years, like 3-4 years, because it's, you know, every time I go to work, always that time, you know, it's just a hassle to back off, you know, drive the car and back off the parkways. I've not been living in the big city. It's harder for me to. I'm kind of, you know, afraid to hit something. So I try to just walk or bike, you know, to the workplace. So I really, I also want to thank you for listening to us. Really, I feel this is the, it make me feel very good that we have the chance to talk to you, you know, no matter what the fact it has. And I really appreciate have this opportunity to speak to you, and you can listen to me. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next speaker would be Stephanie Valerie.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Valier, and I agree with all the other speakers that have already spoken. We've owned the house at 348 Farini since 1985, and all my children went to teach school. It was teach school back then. And the parking and the Farini problem is real. I would come home. I can't even get into my driveway. People park in my driveway. My house, my driveway is right across from the drop-off entrance, and people just park in front of your driveway. And the kids run across the street. It's very, very dangerous. And Cal Poly students are parked on the upper end all the time, and then the teachers park down. So there's no parking on the school side of the street on a school day. So it is a very much of a safety problem on Farini. I really liked his idea of having the building be off of Sierra Romaldo. That drop-off would be much, much safer. Not cheaper. I think the cheapest plan is to do the original plan where the pad is already set right by the library. And I went over there yesterday and pretended I was a mom with a preschooler and what I would do. And if you went through the drop-off...
Didn't write them all down, but I think some of the ones that I can remember
our discussions about specific concerns about parking and traffic on Farini. There were requests. There was a request to relocate the proposed preschool to a pad site that is currently in front of the pad that we, the area that we were talking about, closer to the playground. Then there was also a suggestion to move the preschool to the southern portion of the campus adjacent to the current multi-purpose room. And there was a suggestion from Mr. Dwyer that there were utilities already running through that area and that the costs would be negligible compared to what we're paying now. Were there any other issues that, that other board members might have heard that were questions that Mr. Guy might answer?
I just want to ask a preliminary question or two.
Of course.
What is the overlap between preschool drop-off and elementary drop-off?
The overlap?
Or the separation?
It's not yet determined, but the understanding is there would be a separation to alleviate the congestion of the immediate start of the day with the regular primary kids. So half hour difference. And after the
But that's being looked at, making
yes.
sure that we don't have the existing traffic problem still there when the preschool children show
Correct.
Up or vice versa.
Correct.
And is there someone here who can address programmatically why about the location preferences for the site? Is that Mr. Guy?
Dr. Prater looks like he can address
okay.
that.
Thanks.
Well, what we know is that we're interested in putting a preschool at Pacheco among our other Title I schools. And we had consulted with Mr. Mayfield, the principal at Pacheco, and we basically explored many other options besides the current one. And the preference of the site is that location when considering the different options. Now, programmatically, I have seen Farini. I've been out there, and I've seen the congestion they speak of. When we part of my position on this is I think we can do more in by way of, and it was some of the suggestions that Mr. Dwyer provided, I think we can do probably a better job of working with our parents and our staff to mitigate the congestion on that side. I've talked to Mr. Mayfield about that, and he's willing to explore those things. But as of right now, our preschool program itself has not been fully implemented. We're still in the program development phase, consulting with experts, trying to figure out the right model, which then would introduce the idea of what's the best time frame to hold the program. So much of it is still up in the air, and so it's hard to answer these questions, address these concerns. I too don't want to have to redo this. I want to do it right from the get-go. We have addressed many of these concerns as best that we could, and we are, in fact, looking at different options or have considered them. We keep coming back to this option. Now, I'd like to turn that back over to Mr. Guy to kind of explain how that has unfolded and why it is right now in the location that it's in.
So getting back to what I believe I heard were the concerns, and then they primarily revolved also just around parking and safety, the city's lack of enforcement for the parking zone that's there. One of the people mentioned that there was no problems on Farini until the street was open, which is really not our problem. That's something that the city is responsible for. Absolutely, Mr. Millar. So I think I captured what the questions from the public were, and so if you can kind of address those, I would appreciate that.
Okay. Well, it's a lot of questions and a pretty in-depth survey of what's going on there. Just a little history. In the late 90s, there were scenarios that did have a great deal of parking on that side of campus, and it was flipped to be on the Cuesta side of the campus. So parking was eliminated, and that was a favor of the community there to reduce the traffic and the parking. In 2000, there was the preliminary work that took place to establish portables in that area, at which point in time this location was featured with utilities. I did mention that pretty much throughout the presentations, that this was a location of it was cost effective. It's also it is attractive. There's existing trees. It's next to the existing playground. It's kind of by itself, which was favorable in Mr. Mayfield's opinion as well. It's accessible area. It's a nice environment. The other locations just didn't ring out to be as good, in his opinion, or within the facility itself. The location over by Cerro Romualdo is a start from scratch. It would be more money. It would probably still need a turnout drop-off in front, in spite of the fact it has a road going by. It is closer to the parking lot, and nothing's impossible. You can find utilities where you need to find them. There is an expense in anything that you do. But it was least favored for the cost as well. So we just kept on landing at the existing location where it is now proposed.
Yeah, I was just going to say, are there board members that have questions for Mr. Guy?
I just want to make sure that if I've got my facts straight, the stubbing out of utilities and establishment of locations for portables was a part of our school site consolidations that we went through in 2000,
yeah. It was a master planning.
And I noticed in one of the letters there was the complaint that the site had gone from 200 students to 500 students, and actually what we were intending to do at all of our sites was to plan ahead after the school consolidation, which was an economies kind of decision, and it was a good one. But every one of our sites was, well, I think it's every one of them, was planned out to have portable relocatables and utilities and preparations made for them to anticipate the kind of growth and programmatic changes that school districts have to deal with. So is that pretty much
it? That's correct. It was part of the master plan that was featured in 2000.
My question is mainly about the Sierra Romualdo site. In order to use that, you would have to do some grading and place aggregate for a pad in that area.
Yes. Also then, true of the existing.
So there is some grading that's going to go on.
Yeah, there'll be some minor grading. We're going to, if you're familiar with the site, there's the existing pad, and then it kind of slopes down. Mm-hmm. We're putting it into where it kind of slopes down, so it's heeled in. The building door thresholds will be at grade, so it requires no ramping, so that it has a flat access to the play area, flat access to the front of the school.
In order to bring the utilities at let's say that one of the proposed sites, the Cerro Romualdo, you would have to make a connection to whatever the water lines and sewer lines and electrical that's in the street?
I think it would be that we would tie into existing sewer on the campus. Not engineering it, obviously, off the cuff, but it's going through the middle of the field, up probably 200 feet, but that's the main sewer line for the school. There's also on the other side of the drive across the street from the multi-purpose room. That has its own sewer line there. Water would have to come from the multi-purpose room from the domestic supply. The power would have to be realized from conduit going through to the multi-purpose room, as well as data.
Okay. All right. Thank
Nothing
you.
Is stubbed out for future anyway.
Mr. Buckman.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Quisenberry. Are you done?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah. Jeff, in talking to staff
It's my understanding that the school originally, when it was designed, the front entrance to the school was facing Farini. Is that?
That is one of the scenarios where there was two large parking lots and the bus turnout, and administration was to be placed on the Farini side. That design was part of the original mitigation. There's notation, I believe it's in the board agenda from that letter, referencing right turn only out of the Cerro Maldo parking lot. There is no parking lot there. It's been eliminated. Bus parking on Felton, we've taken care of that. It is on Felton. The parking was then moved to Cuesta, as suggested by the mitigation. The interest was to flip the campus for the mitigation, put the parking, as I spoke before, on the Cuesta side. That was a big move there. With the existing portables, they were silenced for their noise. They have noise suppression hoods on them, probably the only ones that we have. A wood fence versus chain link, which is pretty standard for us, that has a tongue and groove for noise mitigation. We have landscaped in front of the fence, and we planted additional trees in the turf turnout. We've had some foot traffic through some of the landscape area that's prevented some success of the taller shrubbery that was intended in the portables on the lower side. We've turned it into a one-way only loop. It used to be two ways, I believe, at one time when it first started. That's some of them.
And then the last question I have, it seems like many of the concerns that the people in the neighborhood have are related to the city's inability to enforce their own traffic rules and regulations. Do you have any take on that?
I've heard them voice that concern, and probably some truth to that. Where it is the district's error, I don't think so, but they have voiced that concern to me, and I've seen traffic, and it's not always favorable. It's about half hour in the morning is pretty busy there, and then the afternoon's a little lighter because people come in to pick up more staggered with after programs. It's not all at once like the first start of school.
Jeff, you talked about the mitigation on the other portables. So I have two questions. One, when those other portables were discussed and then placed, was this clearly located and named as a possible
Yes, it
site?
Has always been on the plans.
Okay, and then are there plans for mitigation at this site, this new site?
Kim, could you fire up the landscape slide just so we can kind of talk about it more visually? And I need a pointer. Okay, this is a current layout. This is the 36 by 40 building. This is 24-inch box trees here and here. This band of shrubbery here is about 15 feet. It's a Pittosporum species. This is the enclosure for the air conditioning unit that will be involved with noise mitigation. So we're doing a view shed type mitigation here. We're electing to do that. There's also a slight turnout there just for the convenience of off hour. It's not for permanent parking. It's just part of the loop and makes it convenient in addition to the accessibility. And that would be what we're doing. Noise mitigation, landscape.
Well, I was looking at in our folder, page 2.4, and the mitigation monitoring program. I see that under the traffic safety number 2, I'm looking at the various bullets, and the third bullet, it seems like everything else has been at least addressed. Designating Felton as the bus loading area, that's been done.
Correct.
And the buses are told to turn left. or north on Farini?
Of the five, we may have one that periodically goes down Farini.
Okay, turn south.
But when the median went in, that bus typically went up to Highland and hung a left, and depending on what's going on, or if we have a sub, and we try to keep everything going left.
Okay.
We might have one in five, and not every day.
And isn't Farini at the upper end there by Highland? From Highland to Farini, that's no longer an available left, right?
You no have longer to go an available left.
Okay.
Correct.
And the one I wanted to really ask was develop and administer a school ride-sharing program, parent outreach program, encourage use of drop-off points other than along Farini. Has that ever been to your
Mr. Mayfield, he puts out newsletters. He encourages parents to do everything that is stated in there, to park on Cerro Romaldo, to utilize the staff parking area, to exercise caution when parking on Farini, to try to not park on Farini. He does dog the traffic situation. He also has citations that he puts reminders on windshields when he sees a vehicle there that is parked inappropriately in the turnout area in particular. He tries to...
Shields taking was a grace period at the beginning of the school year where basically people were kind of told and flyers went home. And then we did have a police officer there. It's not like crime solving. They know when drop-off is and they know when pickup is. It sounds like a inadequate police response to an obvious problem, and I think that should be worked on. I'm kind of interested in hearing from Mrs. Shields about how C.L. Smith handles their drop-off at the pre-K and special needs kids facility at Smith.
I'll bet you never thought you'd be talking about parking, did you?
Let me see if I can remember. We did call the police in and have them assist us because at the situation at C.L. Smith, as you know, Walt, is that we have a very small street and you have people double parking and then people trying to go around them. And so we had some serious situations as well, and we did ask for some police support with that. And a couple tickets were given and the problem seemed to go away. And then a few months later, we'd start to see it come up again. We'd put things in the newsletter. I'd be out there before school, after school. It would raise again. We'd ask the police to come out. They'd come out, and the problem would go away again. This is what we tried to do with it. Now, for our preschool children, I believe all of our preschool children did come on a bus, and they were met by staff, and they were escorted to the classroom. So. No, that's not true. Let me correct myself. I had to think about it for a minute here. We our other children, again, because we had two compiling together, so we did have children that were coming with their parents, and the parents were walking them to their preschool class. And we have parents that, you know, would park in our lot. We had parents that parked on the street, and we had parents that would need to park on the next block over in order to be able to get their kids there safely.
Okay. Thank you, Amy.
I'm just wondering if we have a crossing guard at Pacheco?
No, because it's a magnet school. It is, it's not required to have a safe routes to school program, which that would be part of. In the mitigation, it stated if there was to be a change from the magnet school, that perhaps there would be a crossing guard at, it was suggested, at Tassajara. But there is not one currently.
Wondering though,
it is, yeah, that's considered the, you know, one of the main thoroughfares, the front.
Is there any possibility of utilizing a crossing guard type person, not in the capacity of crossing guard, but in sort of a traffic control?
I think anything's possible. I think it's staff. If, you know, you have, Bishop's Peak does have more hands on deck in that respect. Principal gets involved and teachers get involved. It's not always pleasant. Not everybody's happy to be told what to do when they're driving. It's not always the favored position to be in as a staff member. But they do that, I know.
Well, I'm just thinking about Baywood has a crossing guard whose purpose is to help children cross 11th Street.
Mm-hmm.
But
walk to school, campus, all of it.
It's not, I wouldn't imagine that it's a huge financial burden to have a person like that, not a staff person, not a teacher, not an administrator, mm-hmm. but a crossing guard that is specifically hired to work on keeping traffic flowing properly and just sort of patrolling that area at the beginning and end of the day mm-hmm. to have an individual devoted to that. Is that feasible?
It's feasible.
In response to your concern, we can certainly look at that and study it as one of the mitigation. Once we get the program, the starting times, ending times, we look at all of those issues and determine what kind of impact that preschool is really going to have on the campus as a whole, and any changes we want to make because of that impact. We can bring back more solid information to you after we get all that figured out.
Yeah, it sounds like an impacted situation. I don't know how much of it is really our fault or our problem. I mean, when it was Teach School, it had a very small population. But things have changed over time, and now there are impacts, and I feel for the neighbors there. And I also, you know, believe that I want to have a preschool program. So I'm thinking, just my thought would be that we need to, perhaps we could add our voice to increasing the police presence.
That's easily done anyway.
Okay, and
even without a pre.
I'm very impressed with the community and their persistence, their ability to have over the years influenced what's been going on both in their neighborhood and at the school site. They've met the original plans for where the multipurpose room and the offices are moved to the center. The community was able to get the city to mitigate the traffic on Farini by blocking it and making it the way I used to come home and get that taken care of. But the concern that I'm hearing loud and clear from everyone that's spoken is safety, safety, safety. And towards the end of the presentation, it seemed that there were, and when one of the speakers, it seems there were 6 points brought up. I also, along with Ms. Rogers, would like to consider, and that's that there's no buses on the street, and I just wrote these down quickly, so they may be wrong. Staff must use the parking lot. The staff must provide supervision and improve entry and exit from the drop-off. And then the 6th point was that there are drop-off procedures at other preschool sites, so that rather than parents necessarily getting out of their cars, there was staff there with a clipboard, there was staff there escorting the children, and I think that sounds like a way of making that drop-off work more quickly and safely. So I'd like to add those thoughts to the crossing guard.
Well, I have less interest in second-guessing the location of the preschool program, but I will join the other comments that were made, and I think that Mr. Miller is correct, both right and wrong. I think we should look at a programmatic response to how students are dropped off at our elementary sites and pre-K sites, and it should be programmatic and district-wide, but also we've got a recognition that there are site-specific things that should be responded to, and I believe that's what you meant to say. Also, based on my own life experience, parking tickets work wonders. I've written a bunch. And I would like to see some kind of coordination with SLO PD and the enforcement side of this. So I think that if we can respond to some of these efforts to mitigate the situation on Farini, we should. I still think the location of the portable and the programmatic impacts are a good fit for the site and for the district. So I look forward to seeing what we can come up with to try to alleviate the current problem and not to exacerbate it. And I lived in Telluride for a year. It's a fabulous mountain.
Great. So. Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I just want to concur with what Mr. Buckman said and also Mr. Millar in the sense that some of this can be, seems to me we have a current problem and then there's some anticipation of it becoming worse. And I think that without having even started the building, moving it, and deciding how that's going to look, I agree with Ms. Rogers and Ms. Roger and Mark Buckman again, Mr. Buckman, on the idea that we can mitigate some of this by taking various steps for the existing problem, and we can address the other one or attempt to address it as we have a better idea what that program looks like.
Okay. What I'm hearing from the board, and first of all, there are two things I think we need to do tonight. The first is I would take a motion. The board has agreed to go forward with the preschool on the site that was identified and that we agreed upon several months ago. So the first thing I want to do is find out if there would be a motion by any board member to move that preschool. So I'm not seeing a motion to move the preschool. The second thing that I clearly heard the board say was that they want to give the staff direction, I believe, and if I didn't get this right, please tell me so. Direction to work with the city on parking enforcement and mitigation. Is that correct? Investigate other possible solutions for what it seems is the parking and congestion problem at the school site on Farini, and to look at parts to make sure that they're safe. And I think Mrs. Shields inadvertently talked about that too and the concerns we had at C.L. Smith. Is there anything else that I missed? No, I don't think we need a motion to reaffirm this at all. I think we need to give direction to staff. Do you understand the direction the board is giving you?
I do.
Okay. We're going to take about a 5-minute break because I think you need to take down your computer right now. Is that correct? Is that your computer? So we'll take a 5-minute break and the board will begin the meeting again at 8:30.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to have Mr. Miller speak on behalf of the state budget.
In the interest of time and brevity, let me say, nothing's happened. Now, there has been one significant development. If you remember, the state budget was passed with a designated trigger in it that should this event happen, this will be the response. And what they were attempting to do was to validate their estimates on revenue. And everybody knew that it was a rather optimistic prognostication of revenue for the state at the time. And the trigger is to be measured in November. And should the November revenues not meet expectations, then there will be an implementation of mid-year cuts on school districts. And the mid-year cuts are estimated fairly accurately to be $260 per student. And that will be a significant amount of money for everybody. If that trigger hits, and here's the point, the first month's revenues came in excess of 10% below the estimates, that the actual income taxes were higher, corporate income taxes were very low, and sales taxes were very low. Now, all of this was prior to the federal debt limit issues and crisis, and you can imagine that very few people, me amongst them, spent very much money during the process of trying to figure out whether the federal government was going to drive us into recession or whether they were going to actually pass a increase in the debt ceiling. So as a consequence, I think a lot of people withheld purchases during the month of August up until that vote took place. So I believe that the sales taxes in August are going to be very low also. When we get the final numbers in, I think that we have a real issue developing for us sometime in January.
Wasn't there a court ruling on the redevelopment agency business that blew a $1.2 billion hole in the hole?
There's still an ongoing court case about it. What ended up happening is that the state budget basically said that that cities could no longer use the revenues for their own purposes, that they had to give them to the state. Right. Subsequent to that, several communities have negotiated agreements with the state whereby they can stay in the redevelopment agency business, if you will, develop blighted areas, and only pay a certain amount to the state. So the state basically marketed the right to continue with your redevelopment agency boundaries for a price tag. But the actual validity of what they did and the challenge that the communities are making is a whole separate issue that hasn't been settled yet.
Well, and I don't remember which appellate district it is, but it's the one in Sacramento. I thought they ruled that they couldn't go forward with the.
They might have ruled on a local level in a superior court.
It's headed for the Supreme.
So it might have been an ability to continue business as they've been doing it, but that the continuing challenges are going to happen to the Supreme Court. The state is famous for implementing an illegal act and then challenging people to go to court and prove them wrong. And when the court case happens, they say, "Oh, sorry, we'll make a 10-year payment of damages to you." And they did that with Prop 98 violations. They did that with CTA versus Gould back in the mid-90s. It was all about violating the rights of school districts. And then they said, "Oh, yeah, okay, sorry, here's your payout." And they're going to do the same thing. They don't have any choice. They got no money, and they got no political will to make it right. Never mind. Don't get me started.
Yeah, tell us how you really think there, Russell.
Well, I'll continue and try to be even shorter. The next item on the superintendent's updates has to do with the credential auditing, and it's actually not the correct percent of our teachers certified to teach English learners. So they'll be fully EL certified. We will still have a handful of emergency permitted individuals. These are teachers who have begun work on their CLAD credential or coursework, have made significant progress, and will need to renew an emergency permit. But we're in good shape in terms of our CLAD credentials.
Good evening. Good evening, Board. Rita Delkiskamp and I wanted to give you an update on our mathematics program. We thought we'd start with our symbol. And let's see if I can talk on the microphone and turn my slide at the same time. There we go. So we know our mathematics and where we're going is all about Initiative 5, our Develop a World-Class Program for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, or STEM. Want to lead you and remind you of our specific SMART goals that we have written and have in place and are off and running for this year. The first one is, of course, to increase the academic performance of our students. And the second one is to research the development of a district-wide science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, as indicated by our district documents. We're going to talk about our steps that we've taken so far, even though it is still before the start of school. What you're seeing up here is an in-process, not fully developed, but on its way, symbol representing our work in mathematics. And we, what you see around in the circle are our process standards, part of our math. And this comes from our California Common Core standards that our state has adopted that are going to be a very important part of our movement in mathematics. You see the areas of problem solving, reasoning, and proof. I can't read without my glasses. I'll let you read them if I come a little closer. Connectedness, representation, and communication. our center spot, this is the new learning for the night. It's called productive disposition. That's all about the diligence of being a mathematician, the hard work involved, the believing in yourself as a mathematician, the not giving up. It's the in the elementary level, it's math is great. We love math. It's helping our teachers move from when they read a good book to children and you see the teacher's face light up because they love that story, that we want to make our teachers feel that way in mathematics as well. Our goal that we're going to be talking about tonight is developing an ongoing long-term professional development plan for the various people that you see listed there. What we wanted to share with you is what we've done so far. Starting this week, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, our K-5 teachers have involved in a one-day using investigations to build student conceptual understanding in mathematics. The investigations program is part of our original adoption that we took place 2 years ago, but this portion of the adoption wasn't being used. So we brought the people from Math Solutions in to put this in place for us. The investigations is really about the conceptual understanding part of the mathematics program. And what you're seeing around the room are some of the artifacts that are so far our K-1 and our 2-3 teachers have been involved in thinking about problem solving and thinking about the kinds of questions that we ask our children when we're doing math. And one of the highlights so far is that our presenter shared with us, and this has kind of been our opening book that we used in the math presentation. It's called From Reading to Math, How Best Practices in Literacy Can Make You a Better Math Teacher. So it's all the work that we've been doing in comprehensive literacy over the last 3 years is now going to transfer over in helping our teachers become world-class mathematics instructors. So we're excited about that bridge that's happening. Have just a couple pictures to show you. I did forget to mention, from here on, the work that we're doing in mathematics is all going to be tied in and connected to the California Common Core Standards, because they're coming, and our students who are entering kindergarten this year will be assessed on those standards when they hit third grade. So I wanted to share just a couple pictures. These are our San Luis Coastal Unified School District kindergarten and first grade teachers that were here yesterday. And here we've got some familiar faces from today's workshop from our second and third grade.
And I wanted to share with you a little report for secondary, and actually what we've been having at the same time this past Monday, Tuesday, and also tomorrow is a partnership. Hence our little bridge down here with Cal Poly. Stan Yoshinobu is one of the professors there who has been on our mathematics articulation committee, and he is part of the Academy of Inquiry-Based Learning. So we've made a couple of professors who are helping us. You might recognize this gentleman. He was here earlier this evening. He is also in our session, Mr. Phil Angel. Yes, he is. Our teachers had an opportunity to share their math thinking with the group. As you can see, some of the presenters and the ones down here are thinking really hard because they have problem-solving sessions to help them, too. And here are just a few more pictures of our teachers at work. What we also want to share with you from these summer math institutes that are going on is that we are currently working another partnership with Dr. Kate Riley, a professor at Cal Poly, who is helping us write a grant, a California Math and Science Partnership grant. And our goal is to sign up 60 of our teachers. They'd have to be grade 3 to algebra 1 mathematics teachers. But our goal is to sign up 60, because if we have at least 50, that could bring in $1.5 million over the next 3 years to our district, with the focus of helping our teachers to learn how to implement the Common Core Standards. So we're in the thick of it right now, writing the application, recruiting teachers, and we're really looking forward to that possibility. What it would provide is mainly professional development. We would have three summers, if we were able to get this grant, of week-long summer professional development, plus 20 hours during the year, and then 24 hours of follow-up. And something that's really nice is that we would be able to provide a stipend for our teachers. And we looked at the budget and we went as high as we could here because we know our teachers are working really hard and we wanted to be able to compensate them the best we could for their participation in this program because we know ultimately it would benefit all of our students. And again, what they'd be learning is the Common Core standards, implementing the eight standards for mathematical practice that are part of those standards. This is a need we've identified. Our teachers want to know how to diagnose better what students understand as far as mathematical concepts, and of course, implementing strategies that help all of our students. So again, by next week, we hope to have those 50 or 60 teachers to help us out. They just need to complete a short survey and commit to working with us for 3 years. And then the last item we wanted to report to you on is this idea of STEM. Last year, there was a forum held by the county. It was very successful, had representation from many people, business, educators, scientists. And we went, Amy and I went along with other representatives from our district. And since then, we've had some follow-up meetings. And what's going on right now is we are under construction. Okay, we're trying to formally organize this group. And so what we have done so far is I've been attending the meetings, and I just volunteered us last meeting to be the K-12 representative on the advisory committee. And then also I'm part of the communications working group. So we are out there saying San Luis Coastal is interested, and we want to be a strong partner with everybody else. And as soon as this gets a little bit more organized, then Amy will be coming along, and we'll both be attending and representing our district. And I think that's it. Yes.
Any questions? Mr. Quisenberry.
Of the people that are attending the secondary math, how many teachers are attending at this point?
24.
And are they a pretty good cross-section from middle school through high school, through, let's say, algebra, through even calculus?
Yes, we have calculus represented in there. Sixth grade is where it begins. We have lots of middle school, lots of high school, yes.
Is the idea that these will probably be a cadre of teachers that will eventually disseminate this information or something to that extent?
Absolutely. The idea is to support these teachers who have expressed this interest and to get that spark going. And then, yes, of course, we would expect that they would share with their colleagues. And I think what will happen is as they begin to see changes in their classrooms and their teachers also see those changes and kids getting excited about math.
As a district, specifically, to move this forward. So I'd just like to tell you a little bit of a story. And as we move forward, it will hopefully just give you a quick brush of all the things we are currently doing and what we're planning on doing this year. And hopefully by the end of this brief presentation, I will scale it down because it is getting late. But I first want to say that last spring, while we were in the process of adopting the initiatives, I met with teacher Greg Wilcox. And he is a fantastic teacher over at Los Osos Middle School. And he and I had developed a bit of a rapport, and I began to become interested in what he did. And he's just a dynamic educator. And so I asked if he would put together a video clip for us, meaning for my purposes of getting out and talking to people. What is it that we're trying to do? And I took my hands away from it and let him run with it. This is something that he created. I think it's wonderful. But I'd like to start this evening with his video for us, and what I think will allow us to at least find a unique definition through the eyes of Mr. Wilcox.
On this godforsaken mudball called Earth. And what I'm trying to say is that most examiners use a clipboard. I don't believe that. What I do believe in is my cup of coffee. And that coffee's hot, filled right to the brim.
If it's spilled on me, probably burned it, huh?
Speak up, son!
Yeah.
Nobody likes to get burned, do they? So it's real simple. You burn me, you fail. You don't, you pass. It's as simple as that.
Greg has called me a few times wanting to know how it went, and we had a little technical difficulties when I met this past week or last week with our administrative team and the cognitive coaching group. So I will pass it along that I shared it with you. And what I want to start off by saying, as you saw at the very end, is we have some really fantastic things happening in our school district. That really needs to be stated loud and clear. In each of these areas, I can come up with many examples that are powerful examples of adults who love and care for children and for one another. So given that, why are we here and why am I speaking to you like this? I think it's because excellence in education doesn't happen by accident. We have to be intentional about what we're doing. And if we're honest and intentional about what we see in our school district, we'll know that we have some issues. We have some problems. We have some gaps, some holes. If you're a child in poverty in San Luis Coastal, you have, you're going to have a tough time. It is the truth. It speaks loud and clear in the data. We don't have the AYP yet in our data, but I'm absolutely convinced that when we do see it, we will see that we, if you're a minority student in our school district or a child in poverty, you are struggling in this school district. You are struggling. And we need to do something about it. And I would also argue that we could stretch and improve what we do for all kids. So really, that's what this is, and that's the context I share with you. So I'd like to bring you along and just tell you a story about what we're doing in each of these things as we move forward. Okay? So the very first thing that I'd like to talk about are the three R's. I believe these are the foundational framework from which we work from. The first R really is about relationships. And I have to say that the longer I'm here, the more I realize that there are some incredibly wonderful people in our school district, parents, students, and staff. And you as the board get to make decisions on behalf of our professionals and our students, and I believe you've done an exceptional job. It starts with relationships. When you hold high expectations. When you hold high expectations for students, they resent you on some levels, but on the other side, the unspoken is that they know you care.
if you've developed a relationship and if you've connected to things that you know are important to them. Rigor is about the ability to challenge students in the classroom with creative thinking, in-depth thought, problem-solving, engaging learning, and that's no easy task in a standards-based environment. It requires a lot of skill, a lot of professional development, and a lot of teamwork. That's why these three R's are so important, and I see them as the cornerstone to what we do. So I'd like to start with all means all. They are simple words, aren't they? But in reality, they're everything but simple to achieve. All means all means I'm speaking not just all kids, but all adults in our organization as well. And I go back to those three R's. I can't help myself. But let's talk about where we're going as we move forward. So to address all means all, because that's what you've asked me to do. Well, I believe you have spoken loudly about the level of support that you have allocated to achieve success for students, for all students. And part of those resources are additional clerical support in all of our schools, additional counseling, additional sections, intervention teachers at all the sites, specifically the elementary sites, extra sections at the secondary level, the professional development that you just witnessed with Amy and Rita. Those are just the beginnings. We're actively out seeking partnerships to bring in more support for our staff. Another critical piece is leadership matters. We set the tone. We set expectation. Cognitive coaching was something that we just went through the first 2 days of an 8-day training, which will spread out over 2 years. Cognitive coaching is a research-based program anchored to brain research, and it's how we develop others. And how we develop others is by, first of all, establishing a relationship, establishing trust, and not providing answers, but providing an active listening, an active engaging relationship with others. The whole point of cognitive coaching is to get our TOSAs, our teachers on special assignment, all our administrators, including myself, to begin to work with other professionals in our organization to try to get them connected to what we're trying to do and really to empower them. That's what cognitive coaching is about. Additionally, the breakthrough coach is a critical element to that, especially for our administrative team, because really what that is an expectation that 1 to 2 full days a week, all the administrators, including myself, are expected to be on sites, walking, being with people, being in community with the professionals that are delivering those critical pieces of all means all. So presence of mind, relationship building, and really deliberately and overtly trying to develop relationships with people that are working directly with the kids, trying to support them in their success. And then finally, I see that process as building people and building teams. It's all part of that whole picture. When I say building people and building teams, what I really mean is this is going to take us some time, but I want you to know that we're very intentional about what we're trying to do, to make sure that all our kids and all our employees feel part of the success story that we're trying to create here in San Luis Coastal. The other piece is our classrooms of the future. I can tell you that we've put 800 new computers in our classrooms throughout the district this summer. We've also provided many teachers with new workstations with brand new laptops so they have greater flexibility when they teach. We are also scheduled and determined to become completely wireless as a district within 3 years. It's a big commitment, but it's a critical part when you see where education and the and critical instructional tools are heading. And then finally, it's those teaching tools. It's those putting the instruments in the hands of teachers and students, which allow them to integrate, talk to each other, problem solve, and feel more successful and engaged. I see classrooms of the future really being all about relevance and rigor. So it's a critical piece. Accelerated and specialized learning. What have we done? Well, we're preparing the process this year to discuss magnet pathways beyond what we offer at Teach and Pacheco. And really what this is I believe that all 4th, 5th, and 6th grade students in all of our elementary schools deserve accelerated learning. And a big issue for me, a big piece for me, is I would love to see us increase minority student involvement in our accelerated courses. I don't think we're overt enough about it. I don't think we're intentional enough about it, and we need to be, especially when we start looking at the younger years and really expecting more from all of our kids, especially those that we traditionally know struggle with learning. So data culture. This is a big piece, and I just want to talk briefly about what we're doing. We have hired fantastic elementary and secondary assessment TOSAs, and they're going to be critical in helping build support for the development of common assessments in our district so that it doesn't fall on the teachers in the classroom where they're teaching all day and then have to come out and start building those common assessments. So it'll be part of a support system on how we look at developing assessments in our district. Also, we have Data Director, which we purchased a year ago, maybe 2 years ago now. And that's a critical piece to building a data culture because it helps us identify areas of success and targeted improvement. This is a critical piece to helping us understand our district. Also, the ability to design multiple assessments to improve instruction and help students learn. This isn't testing kids to death. This is looking at a wide range of how we assess students. There's a lot of movement right now throughout the country and in the state to not just go after the drill and kill type assessments, but really start looking at a broader range of how kids can demonstrate their understanding. And I believe that we need to treat data like a friendship, one that needs to be nurtured, developed, listened to, and cared for. This is not something you threaten people with. This is something you learn to appreciate over time as a critical feature to how we learn and grow as professionals. College and career pathways. We have two shining examples that I want to share with you. SkillsUSA national champions right here in San Luis Coastal this last year. Michael Mullen and Zoltan Shapiro, gold medal winners. They're the best in what they chose to do. Michael Mullen for automotive and Zoltan Shapiro for computer technology. These guys are amazing. And I wanted to bring that to you as a shining example of what we're doing well. Also, Morro Bay High School got their WASC accreditation, their full 6-year review, which is fantastic. It's an example of what they're doing well. What they noted in the WASC review summary is that Morro Bay did a fantastic job of going after those kids who are struggling and really trying to support them. Also, what I wanted you to know is we've added additional math sections and we've purchased the Read 180 comprehension program. This is a very important piece to helping kids who struggle with reading comprehension in particular. What's great about this program is in ninth grade, kids that are struggling accessing the typical ninth grade English language arts curriculum will get units, actual high school credit for freshman English by taking that intervention class. So it's a powerful, powerful piece where you build their capacity so they can find greater levels of success. Also, we've increased ROP and CTE offerings. We're continuing to at both of our high schools. It's an incredibly important piece. English language arts and STEM. Rita mentioned what we're doing with the STEM project. You heard about the mathematics articulation committee we're actively working on. That is an amazing first step in helping our district come up with a response to mathematics that I think is well-conceived and will bring us where we need to go. We're active participations in the Central Coast STEM project. We are still focusing this year on comprehensive literacy and reading recovery. Huge, huge benefits. And I'm having teachers come to me, talking to me about their insights around comprehensive literacy and how it integrates and applies across the content areas. I'm having some wonderful conversations with individual teachers around the work being done in those areas. And then, of course, as Rita mentioned and Amy mentioned, the professional development partnerships that we're actively seeking around literacy and mathematics, it will help all of our students and all of the teachers and I will call it administrators as well, develop their own capacity. Preschool and transitional K, we started, thanks to the work of Amy Shields, we're going to have two transitional kindergarten classrooms opening this year, one at Los Ranchos and one at Monarch Grove. We're very excited about that work. Additionally, we really are going after preschool Kennedy notion that a rising tide lifts all ships. It's so true. In our community, that's how we're going to go from good to great. I also want to talk about empowering professional groups. As Mr. Nett mentioned, we are still without a contract with the SLCTA. So I put in all means all, because I can tell you right now we can't accomplish these things without everybody on board, working in the same direction. And so this is obviously a very important piece and a very insightful piece from the board, by the way, because you've given me a directive to work towards a constructive labor resolution with SLCTA, and I want you to know that we're well on our way. We believe we are going to be successful in achieving that, which I think is a critical piece in building trust. And I'm optimistic about making that happen. And I think it's very important. We're also very pleased with our interest-based approach with classified unions in our school district. And ultimately, what this is all about is getting all the adults in our organization committed to the common goal of student success. Culture of care. Kids are at the center of this for deliberate reasons. We've added additional elementary counseling and clerical support. The pressures in society right now are remarkable. Kids are coming to our schools. Parents are coming to the offices stressed out. And it's one of those things that we can't underestimate. So you thought about that proactively, and there's extra support. I can tell you our counselors and our clerical staff will still feel overwhelmed, even with the extra support. We need to focus on the three R's, and this is my big, strong belief that I believe every adult in our schools need to know all the kids' names. They need to identify. It's really painful if you step in the shoes of a child who goes through an entire day where no adult in the course of their whole day, including home, failed to call them by their name. It seems simple, but it's a huge piece to connecting kids to school community. That's why it's important. We need to be really overt about it. Partnerships with outside agencies. I'm very pleased working with Jackie Kirk-Martinez and Chris Dowler through Student Support Services on making sure that we are partnering with as many agencies outside of our own to make sure that our families, especially those at most risk, have help, have connectivity, have a way, a mechanism to get connected to simple services that many of us take for granted. And that's what we're working on this year. Of course, we want kids to love school because they're cared for, engaged, and excited about learning. I want to close tonight with what I found to be a powerful and moving book. I read a book called The Courage to Teach by Parker Palmer. Over the summer, a parent who was upset met with me last spring. She brought this book in and said, I'd like you to read this. I think it will move you. And she was right. And I want to share two quotes with you that are apropos to what we need to do and what the calling is. The origin of the word professional refers to someone who makes a profession of faith in the midst of a disheartening world. The darkness around public education is deep. But our great calling, opportunity, and power as educators is to shed light in dark places. So I'm sharing that piece with you because I see the initiatives, I see the work that we're doing, I see the direction that you've set forth for us, to make sure that all means all, that we reach out to all our kids, and I think we're going to shed a lot of light in those dark places here in San Luis Coastal.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Prater.
Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments from board members? I think you said it all. Thank you very much. And on behalf of the board, we appreciate the work that you and all of our staff are doing on behalf of the children of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Let's move on to item number one, the delegation of signature authority. Mr. Miller? Oh, I see he's not here. Mrs. Holmes, would you care to tackle this one?
Well, this is just an annual authorization that you do. We're making a change at this time to add Mr. Pinkerton to the group as a new member, but every fiscal year we start this and do these periodically throughout the year if we have a change of personnel. It just allows us to make signature approvals on bank accounts and various documents the district needs to submit.
Okay. Is there any comment from the public on this item? Bringing it back to the board, any comments? Or
software system, along with the corresponding technology tool for those purposes. And I think since you will be using those things, the whole point of this is it'll save a lot of paper and a whole lot of clerical time putting these binders together. It's a terrible waste if you look at it over a long term, both time and products. So I think it's time that we look at this and examine the next best steps. And I can do the cost analysis for you over time. It will absolutely save. It'll pay for itself and actually will help assist us become better communicators as well. So I'm looking for two board members that would like, perhaps three board members that would like to participate in this process with myself and Ms. Holmes.
Okay. We have a volunteer from Mr. Buckman on the technology side. And then on the left, we have...
Well, you know I have to do it because I'm just barely off the rotary phone and I am the most resistant board member. So it's got to be simple.
Absolutely.
I've got to be able to navigate it. If I can do it, whatever it ends up being, then anybody can do it. So I throw myself into the mix as the acid test.
Absolutely. Anybody else have an interest? Mr. Quisenberry. Okay. So we have three board members to create a subcommittee to do that.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I think we've got three, no offense, Mr. Millar, but I think we've got three perfect board members, and you and I are just... chipping away in stone.
Camp, so be redundant.
We'll take it from there.
Okay. Just a couple, you know, when you look it over, I would just make a request, some things that I think would be really important for me, would be able to take notes, confidential notes, on the whatever agenda items that we use. So when I say confidential, that confidential to me only. So confidential secret. That's real important to me. I think also I'd like us to look at whatever's going to provide us with easy ways of navigating through the board agendas. I'd like us to look at ways of embedding things into the agendas so that, for example, in your state of the district speech this evening, it would be nice to have been able to embed those things, or it'd be nice to have been able to embed Mr. Wilcox's video presentation, if we're referring to Ed Code or referring to board policy as we're going through those things, to be able to do those as sort of hyperlinks. Not that we'd necessarily do it, but it would be nice to be able to look at those references and links. I can't imagine that stuff doesn't exist out there and that it can't be done. So those are things that I think would be important for us to create a paperless agenda. And I guess the other thing is that thinking about when we're sitting up here, whatever else we do, not cutting us off from the public who we serve. Okay. So anybody else got any ideas? And I know you guys are going to be on the subcommittee, and I'll trust you to go for it. Okay. All right. Great. So do we need
Did you have a color preference, Mr. Unger?
Something to match my baby blues would be nice. So do we need to take action on this, or I think we've given direction to establish a subcommittee of board members, and you guys will get in touch with us. Item number four, decision on a process to fill board vacancy due to resignation of Phil Angel. I'm sorry, Mr. Mullen.
I was going to just jump in here on number four. I don't know if it's correct motion is to table, but I'd like to have us entertain the thought of postponing this until Mrs. Sheffer can be present to participate as well. Is there any downside to us waiting until the next meeting?
We have 60 days. Is that not correct?
Yeah, this particular item on the agenda is to decide whether to appoint, which starts to appoint a board member to replace Mr. Angel or to go for an election. So that's what this item is.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that case, never mind.
So
in that case, I would prefer that we appoint, just because I think the costs involved in an election is maybe unnecessary.
Is there any other feedback from board members? We can just get Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I concur. I think we need to look at appointing a board member.
Okay. Mrs. Roger, are you in concurrence with that? Mr. Buckman? So we have a consensus to go ahead and do an appointment and begin that process. Mrs. Holmes, do you need a motion on this?
I don't, but I do have a question passed. The rationale for that was that if there is a large pool of candidates, it's unwieldy for the whole board to kind of
Correct.
Look at those. And in the past, you've sort of set a threshold that if there were X number, then you'd be willing to entertain Okay. all of them as an interview. And if it exceeds that quantity, the subcommittee would whittle Okay. it down to a manageable number for you to interview.
Jim?
Well, I'm in favor of expediting the process following the board policies and the bylaws. And I would entertain the idea, or at least suggest, that we pick a number somewhere between 6 and 10 as a number that the sub, you know, whatever that cutoff is for the subcommittee to make a decision.
I think you still could have some time to work on those if you want. The direction that would be more helpful to us as staff is for us to know if you are prepared tonight to direct us to place the advertisement and what the deadline would be for applicants to submit their applications. What kind of a date are you looking for to conduct probably a special meeting for those interviews?
Mrs. Roger?
We've been down this road before several times, and so I'm confident that staff knows exactly how to proceed with placing an advertisement. And I don't know what would be an appropriate time frame, but from the date the ad went out, 3 weeks, something like that,
to close. What do you think is reasonable?
We could get an ad in the paper. I can send it to them tomorrow. Depending on the newspaper's placement, it may take a few days for it to place, but let's say for sure it would start by Monday at the latest.
Okay, so that's August.
You have another regular meeting on September 6th. Would you want to schedule a special meeting the following week, perhaps? September 13th?
May I just ask a quick question here? So is this only going to be advertised in the Tribune, or are we going
to
post it?
We will post. I can post an application and put an announcement on our website in the morning. That can get out right away. And we can send word to our media connections, but we are required to place a legal advertisement and pay for that, in addition to whatever press coverage we may be able to whittle from the reporters. So that's a technical process that requires us to order an ad through the paper, and it's a few days before they'll put that in publication.
Yeah, I was just curious if that would also go out into, like, Tolosa Press's local...
Well, Tolosa is connected to the Trib, so everything they have is picked up from there, but we'll send it to New Times and all of the local outlets.
Okay, thank you.
And hopefully they'll pick that up.
So in order... order for us to do a September
microphone.
13th.
Can you turn your microphone? Oh,
so you're looking for a September 13th possible special meeting?
We're happy to do this at your discretion. I'm just suggesting that might be a simple thing
to do. I'm just trying to work
backwards.
In the past, have you? What's been the time frame for announcement?
I think if we run the opening for 2 or 3 weeks, that's sufficient to get the word out. And you know, we'll send word to all of our school sites so they can post this, and parents will become aware. I can communicate it through the email link when we publish the word packet, too, so there are some outside parties who receive those and get the word out. So I think that time frame is sufficient to alert people and solicit some applicants.
Okay. So are you thinking of a specific date that the applications would be due at this point?
In the past, once you select the date when you think you want to have those interviews,
right,
we back that up to the board deadline. So it's usually the Tuesday, the week before, so September 6th. And that would give me a day to confirm with the county clerk's office that the applicants are eligible in being registered voters and reside at an address within the trustee area, and publish the agenda packet for the following week.
Okay. So we're looking at September 13th as a possible special board meeting to interview candidates. Okay. And if we do need to, so we would have it closed before September 6th, is that what you're thinking, Kim? So that if we did need to establish a subcommittee for review, we'd be able to do that on the night of the 6th?
Yes.
Okay. So does that work for everybody?
Yeah.
Mrs. Roger?
I'm just remembering past interviews that I think it's very cumbersome to try to interview more than six people in an evening.
Mr. Buckman?
I know that the last time we went through this, we had a subcommittee that worked on a series of questions and then brought those to the board. Everybody got to comment on those. So I just want to throw that into the mix.
Yeah, I think, on committee, perhaps what we should do, and I don't know if we can do it tonight, perhaps what we should do is establish that subcommittee right now, and then they can review the questions, and they can also act as a subcommittee if we need to, winnow. Although my problem with that is Mrs. Sheffer's not here, and I'd rather wait for Mrs. Sheffer. So why don't we wait until the 6th to make that determination? Okay. That's okay with everybody? To determine the committee, yeah, exactly. Okay. So do you have enough information, Kim? And again, we do not need a motion. Okay.
Thank you, President Unger. Just a question on that. Is it possible for us to look at those questions via email and offer comments or suggestions?
Yeah, I can send you in our Friday packet this week the questions we did last time and maybe the previous two appointments, so you have a range of things that you can see that we've done in the past and think about those.
And then I think if you have additional questions, send those back, or suggestions for ones we can delete, we'll send those back to Mrs. Holmes, and then the subcommittee can look at that and they can make those determinations. Does that work for everybody? Mark, you okay with that? Okay. Move on to item number. We're at our action consent agenda. Let me know if you want to pull anything, please. Item number 5, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint hearings. Item number 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Pull.
Item number 7, acceptance of donations. 8, disposition of surplus property. 9, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10, approval of purchase orders. 11, warrants and payroll. 12, milk and dairy products. 13, ready-to-serve pizza. 14, disposal of Class 3 Class 3 disposable records. So I'd like a motion on 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14.
I'll move approval of 5, 7 through 11, 13, and 14.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Mrs. Roger, is there any discussion on the action consent items? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 4-0. Mr. Quisenberry, you pulled number 6?
Yes.
There we go.
Good. If Mr. Pinkerton would come up and address, I mean, or answer a couple of questions of mine. I noticed that we have a large number of new teachers and rehires that are listed as temporary, and six or so teachers that are on the list for as a probationary working towards permanent status. Could you comment on what that's all about and give us some more information, please?
Sure. So first of all, it's an exciting time in San Luis Coastal School District. I would say right now we have currently throughout the summer 59 new certificated staff members that have joined our staff, and so that's great, as well as a number of classified employees. And you know, it's been a busy summer, I will say, in terms of personnel. And as Mr. Robin had said, kudos to Mrs. Keller and to the entire staff in the personnel department. What happens in terms of employees coming into the district, we know certain positions can move into probationary status right when the people come, because when you look at moving teachers from temporary to probationary, we have to do a number of things. We have to look at what positions are categorically funded or one-time funded. We have to look at teachers on leave. We have to look at all of our different positions before we can decide how many or which employees should move from the temporary to probationary status. And so that's something that this month, Mrs. Keller, as well as myself, will be sitting down and going through all of that process, looking at all of our employees and determining which employees we should move from temporary to probationary status. And we follow the education code, you know, to that process. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty positive time that we will be able to move a significant number of employees from that temporary to probationary status. And the goal will be to bring those new contracts to the employees and then back to the board for approval.
Thank you, and I appreciate the hard work that you and Gene Keller have done. I think it's amazing that this number of new teachers have been hired.
Thank you. Okay.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I move the approval of item 6.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Millar. Any discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. Item number 12, Mr. Buckman.
This on. That's what I'm asking.
I would. I don't want to, I guess where I'm coming from, I don't want to blow the contract. However, I do know that chocolate and strawberry milk is an issue in other school districts in California, and I would be interested in hearing from Mrs. Thorson her comments about this.
I can do that, and we get back to you on it. I can assure you that Mrs. Thorson is very diligent in her application of the law to the products that we serve. I don't know what the measurements and all of the requirements are, but Sue would know. Let me get back to you with that information, maybe in a Friday update. I'm willing to guarantee you that everything she's put on this contract is going to meet the standards that the state has. Whether or not it's an issue in other districts, it's probably an issue of not necessarily meeting the requirements, but of a local issue about sugar or other types of things, as Mr. Buckman is referencing. So let me get all of the standards, the measurements, and everything, and put it back, and maybe in a Friday update, get that to you guys.
And given that, but what would you like us to do about this contract right now?
Well,
school starts.
Yeah, school starts, so yeah, I don't want
to. I think it's okay, and I'm sure there's some clause in it about meeting standards or not, and if it doesn't meet the standards, we can cancel the contract if that's what we find. So if the board wishes to change its the practice that we currently have, not its practice, but the district's practice, then you would inform us, and we will go to the next level at the next most opportune moment.
Well, We have four people here tonight, so it's got to pass unanimously, is my understanding. Is that right?
You got five.
Man, I can't even count. I'm sorry.
It's because it's late. We're tired.
And,
just things.
And you want to go home?
Yeah, I do want to go home.
Chris, you had chocolate milk. That's
I wish. Every morning for breakfast, it was me and Nestle's Quick. I would go along and I would support the contract, but I would like to know more about the chocolate milk.
Got it. I'll take it for you.
So, Mark, I don't know if you want to make a motion on this or if we have other comments. Mr. Millar, I'm sorry.
We do have other comments. So, and my comment is the notion that somehow the schools, through their finagling beverages, is going to cure obesity in the United States is, I think, specious.
I can respond to that if you'd like. The CDC, numerous other organizations have said that the schools contribute heavily to the obesity in the United States. In fact, in the state of California right now, every seventh grader receives a type 2 diabetes notice because the situation is so grave. This will be the first generation of kids that life expectancy will be less for them than for their parents. And a lot of it is due to obesity, besides the actual ingestion of the food that's causing obesity. We are a learning institution, and I think that we should model exactly what we expect from our students in health.
Mr. Quisenberry?
I was going to move approval of item number 12, award a bid of bid number 233 for milk and dairy products.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0, and then we'll get some more information on this. Okay, that brings us to advanced agenda. Is there anybody who wishes to add anything? Mr. Millar.
It's not an advanced agenda item, but maybe it would be suitable for the Friday packet. And it is a response to the growing testing scandal out of Georgia, but I hasten to add, what I'm looking for is just whatever protocol procedures we have in our district so that when we put out test results and things to the public that we are sure that we have safeguards in place to make sure that our test scores reflect the true achievement of our students. And the thing I want to avoid is the idea that somehow I'm drawing a parallel between what's happening there and there. It just heightened my awareness of it. And I suspect if it's heightened my awareness, it's probably heightened members of the public's awareness too. So the Friday packet's fine for me.
Okay. Looks like that's it. Let's move to item number 17. Do we have any reports by board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a quick one here. The Friends of the Library in Morro Bay this Saturday are going to have their, I don't know if it's annual or semi-annual book sale from 10 a.m.